Real quick, before we dive in, if you keep finding yourself losing hours every week in the void of Google looking for how-tos and what's next, let's reclaim those hours. Rent My Brain for straight-to-the-point help. I live for problem-solving, simplifying, and seeing businesses succeed. So instead of generalized advice from the web, I'm here to give you one-on-one advice on whatever's got you stuck or stumped. Head over to caseyjordan.com/rentmybrain, book a session for this week, and get back to building your business. Welcome to Steady She Grows. I'm Casey Jordan, and this is the podcast that is dedicated to giving you an honest look at the realities of being a solo entrepreneur. My guess is that you want to grow a sustainable and feel-good business without burnout and overwhelm. I have a passion for creating clarity out of the chaos that is building a business without a giant budget, without a team of people to manage, and in the hours you choose to work. We're talking about the realities of what it takes to be a solopreneur, both logistically and emotionally. And now to today's episode. Welcome to another episode of Steady She Grows. I am excited this week to have Asha Wilkerson of the Wilkerson Law Office. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So this, you caught my eye. So we're going to have kind of a two-part conversation here today.
Perfect.
When you reached, did you reach out to me?
I did. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Is you want to talk about BIPOC entrepreneurs representing, getting more people into the industries and staying in the industries, entrepreneurship. But then I was doing my research and I had noticed you were a lawyer and kind of passed by that. And then I was doing my research. I'm like, oh, like you own your own law office too.
So I
like,
do.
Okay. I was like, back up the train. Okay. We got to talk a little bit about your business journey, but then I definitely want to really talk about the things you're doing to help other small businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. So, mm-hmm.
So go ahead. Tell us a little bit about your business and how you got into business.
All right. So I went to law school straight out of undergrad, mainly because I didn't quite know what else to do, right? I didn't have this desire to do something else before I got like really serious. And I just went straight out of undergrad for better or for worse, right? That's what I did. And my first job out was at a medical malpractice defense firm. So that's representing doctors and hospitals when something has gone wrong or haven't had a great outcome. And I really enjoyed learning about the medicine, but I always wanted to represent people who didn't have a really strong voice, didn't have a loud voice, right? I have come from a civil rights family. In law school, I studied international human rights, and my plan was to move abroad, work for the UN, work in, you know, some country that needed some human rights support. And it didn't happen. So I went to the insurance defense firm. And then after a couple of years there, they downsized. And since I was one of the last people hired, I was one of the first people to get let go. And I applied for employment law positions, and I just didn't fit with any of them, just didn't get the interviews that I wanted. And I thought, okay, maybe it's time to do civil rights. And it was probably 2 months later, a friend of mine said, Asha, you're already helping me on cases. I'm referring you cases. Why don't you just start your own law firm? I'm like, what? No, that's not for me. I had no desire, right? I didn't want to do that. And another month goes by and she's like, you're doing it. And I said, oh my gosh, I guess I am actually doing the work. What happens if I decide in my mind that I'm going to run this thing as a business? Where could I go? So I became the accidental solopreneur in that kind of a space. But what's really interesting about being an attorney, or when you have the skill set where people are paying you to think, you can always think whether you're working for somebody else or working for yourself. So you can always have a job and make some income.
Right. That's awesome. And it's funny because I guess I always assumed there was something harder about setting up a law office than that. Like you need an attorney and you need clients. I assumed there was something, because you think a law office, you think like fancy building, stuffy leather chairs, old white dudes, like,
right, totally.
You know, like you have just totally blown out everything I know about law offices. You've crumbled it all in the last 30 seconds.
Right. Well, I think people also think that about starting a business anyway, right? Whether it's you want to get into food or you want to be a coach or consultant, you know, we see people who are in the journey 15, 20 years down the line, and we see what they've been able to build. But most people don't start out there unless you have some kind of financial backing. So if you want to be a coach, you've got some skill set, you want to start making some food, start with where you are, have your goals in mind, but start where you are and just do it. You can do it.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So tell me a little bit about what kind of area of law you focus in since you're doing your own thing.
Yes. So now I am focused 100% on entrepreneurs. So I help with business formation, creating LLCs or corporations or nonprofits. I help with contracts. I help my clients understand contracts, or I review them for them. And then also I will give them templates that they can use with their customers or with their business partners. And then I also help coaching on hiring employees. So not just coaching in terms of, you know, what's a good fit for you, but what are the actual legal requirements? Is this person an employee? Are they a contractor? What's the paperwork that you need? And how do you protect yourself now that you've got a little bit more liability exposure by bringing someone else into your business?
That's awesome. So I always jump on my guests. I go to their website, their social media. I try to snoop a little bit. And yours was one of those websites within about 5 seconds, I saved it to like my reference folder. I don't have a good lawyer like in my list of, you know, I've got SEO people and marketing people. Mm-hmm. It's like, and bookmark that one.
Right. Thank you. Like, that makes me so happy.
Yeah. It looks amazing. So I'm going to shout that out right now. Make sure to check the show notes for the website. It's thewilkersonlawoffice.com.
Like, that's it.
Yep. Yeah, I will be going back and spending some time there later today.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And that's kind of my mission right now. And you mentioned BIPOC entrepreneurs, but not just Black, Indigenous people of color, but also just folks who've been historically left out of this corporate system. Mm-hmm. For whatever, whether it's sexual orientation, gender identity, you're Black, you're brown, you don't speak English very well, you speak 6 languages and people don't look at that as a value add. It's really trying to bridge that gap between people who have an idea, have a business and want to grow it, and the information that you need to protect and sustain that business. So you can't do it for very long without having your legal ducks in a row or your financial pieces in a row, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of us build businesses for right now, but I'm trying to get us to think about building this business to leave a legacy behind us. And we spend so much time working in our business and we become a slave essentially to our business. We can't go on vacation because of the business. But what happens if we make the business work for us? What happens if we're able to get the systems down and the legal stuff down so that in 10 years, someone else can be running it and we can still be benefiting from that? So I'm trying to get that mindset shift that we're not constantly bootstrapping, right? But that we're really using these businesses as a tool to get us to where we want to go.
Oh my gosh, yes. This makes me think of my mom. She was a solopreneur the entire 20 years. She started her business she was like 45. Mm-hmm. Got her first client, went out and started her own thing, ran an amazing business for 20 years. And I always thought of it as solopreneur. It's named after her. When she's gone, the business will be shut down because it is not work I have any interest in doing.
Right.
But she met a gal along the way who's about 15 years younger than her. And the gal was like, teach me everything you know. Mm-hmm. And as they built this relationship, essentially my mom has sold her client list, for a lack of a better way to put it, to this new person. And so like now when they call my mom, she says, I'm not taking that kind of work anymore, but please call this gal. She will take great care of you. She comes with my highest regards. And like, now this is a second woman who's going to run a business, and this woman's gone on to hire. I'm her VA. So I think we have 4 women on staff now. So we have a business. We have 6 women.
Yeah. That's awesome.
A job out of my mom's single solo endeavor and my mom's ability to think past today.
Right. Right. And then another thing about that. So you said that she was a solopreneur. If she would have created an LLC or a corporation, she could really sell it, right? Whether she wanted to or not, you know, if she wanted to mentor the person who came in after her and just refer clients, that's one thing, right? You could do that. No problem. But you can't sell your business if it's a sole proprietorship. So it just gives you more options to have an LLC, because maybe you want to get bought out by a big tech company or by a big printing firm or whatever it is, right? You can build in a structure of sale that will pay you for the next 15 years, a certain amount of money, right? You can do all these different things, have all these options, but we just need to know what to do and how to do it.
Exactly. Exactly. And I don't remember what legal standing my mom's business was. I think incorporated something beyond an LLC. Mm-hmm. And so she did that. So like, actually, this gal has been buying her out. So for last, I think like 5 years, she pays my mom like a monthly, like consulting fee, like purchase kind of like to start purchasing
that intellectual property that my mom is teaching her, because it's such it's government contract work. So it's very detailed work too. It's not anybody can jump into it. And so, yeah, my mom, like my mom's a wizard. I give that woman so many props. Like that's if I'm half the entrepreneur she ever was, I'll be thrilled.
Right.
And like, yeah. So she like simultaneously has like contract work from this person. So she's got a little spending money now that she's retired, but she's also like selling the business, but closing down the, yeah, it's, and there are a lot of, I know that they have a bunch of contracts in place to make sure all of that is done smoothly. Should somebody change their mind over this, it's been like a, I think it's overall, it's going to be about an 8-year process that this gal basically takes over my mom's business. Yeah.
Yeah. Kudos to your mom. I mean, she sounds super savvy, and I'm glad that she had the wherewithal, you know, to be able to structure it in a way that works for her. A lot of people just don't know, right? They don't know what they can do.
Right. Or I think, like you said, the thing of the accidental entrepreneur, I feel like, especially in minority communities, I feel like that is almost more common than the intentional, like the white dude, I think, averages an intentional entrepreneur, because it's a normal, like, oh, of course I'm going to go start my own business. Like I'm a middle-aged white dude. That's what I do.
Right.
And like, I think the minority community, they run into some sort of issue. They can't get work. They need to be home with kids, you know, whatever the constraint is, and they fall into entrepreneurship and it's the solution for today.
Right.
But carrying that forward. So what are some of the things that you kind of really focus on to help with that continuing for the years to come part?
Yeah, I think a big part of it is just awareness. I think I agree, like you said, I think a lot of people turn to entrepreneurship in underrepresented communities because we don't fit in very easily or don't always fit in comfortably to the dominant paradigm. And I think also because of, you know, resources in the community, a lot of us start businesses as a side hustle to add some extra income, right? So, and there's nothing wrong with a side hustle. And I believe that we should all have multiple streams of income, right? But when you're not thinking about it as really running a business, and it might be a hobby, maybe I like baking empanadas, or maybe my friend made these earrings, right? She's a full-fledged business, but I think she started out as a hobby initially.
Yeah.
And if she didn't like switch her brain to think, I want to do this full-time and make a career out of it, then she would be limited in terms of how much money she'd be bringing in only because of her mindset. Right. But I think what I have found from traveling the world and just being present in my own community, most people, maybe not most, there are a lot of people who are doing something extra to make some money, you know, whether it's a kid that's babysitting or someone who's editing someone's homework or, you know, making the food or washing the cars. But we can start looking at those as businesses that we can really monetize, as opposed to something that we just do to, you know, make a few hundred dollars extra a month, which is not bad. But I think, again, that mindset shift will be able to, to change it. And just knowing that you have just as much right to create your own business and to determine your future and your outcome as the middle-aged white guy, right? Yeah. He doesn't have the same kind of self-doubt because nothing has told him in society that he can't do it, right? Yeah. Whereas us, it's like, I haven't seen too many people do it or do it in a way that I want, but there's something about it that I'm curious about. So I think it's really just having those discussions, seeing what the possibilities are. Who doesn't want to make it easier for their kids to come or for, you know, their neighborhood or their friends and family, right? So it's just putting those resources together and taking one step and then another step and then building, building your dream.
That's awesome. Yeah. Some of my favorite conversations and favorite clients, I have a friend, she's an artist and is in a soul crushing corporate job. And I'm like, okay, let's start talking about how we get you out of that job. And my brain instantly monetizes everything, like to the point that annoys my husband. And I'm like, well, like we could like, I'm like, tell me your art forms. And she's like, I have this, this, and this. I'm like, cool. We can do, here's three income streams for you. And she was like, wait, what?
Right. Right.
And like, hadn't even like, she sees herself as like, I put, you know, a painting on a wall. And I'm like, well, yeah, but we can also like make that like pattern for fabric. We can like make that a hoodie. Like,
right.
There, the possibilities are endless. And
absolutely.
I love that moment of them, of people realizing this could be so much bigger than a hobby or a side hustle, that we can, we can really put our energy into this and, and change something.
Yeah, I have a friend of mine who is an artist also, and there's something about that artist. I mean, everybody has their own limiting beliefs, right? Their self-limiting beliefs. And my artist friend was like, well, you know, but artists don't make a lot of money. And it, you know, that whatever that dominant discourse is about it and what you see other people doing, you have to really break out of that. You know, why not? Who said that artists can't make money? Who said you can't digitize, you know, a print and sell it, you know, and do all these things. So there's definitely a piece of the, I always say like restaurants, this is a big thing. You get into restaurants because you love to cook, but then there's the business side that you have to learn how to run to.
Yeah.
Right. And so I come in with helping people with the business and legal side. You do your passion, but as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, you have to develop those other skills. Otherwise you're just in it for the moment and not in it for the long haul.
Do you find a lot of your clients struggle with the concept of like money and wealth being inherently morally bad? Like it's something we have to work through a lot.
Yeah. You know, and even sometimes myself too, because I studied, you know, human rights, right? And I wanted to represent the person who didn't have a voice and just have so much compassion for folks who are struggling financially. And, you know, our society does a really good job of telling us that people with money are bad, right? That money is bad. And it's not that money itself is bad. It's like, what do you do with the money? And what are the policies that are in place? And, you know, how are you as a person? Money is just a thing. It's like having coffee, right? It's like having, you know, a TV. It's not that the object itself is bad, but what does it do to you and how do you respond to it? So, you know, in the beginning, I'm like, oh, I'm not sure that I can charge, but this is really worth. I know that this service coming from this other person, yeah, they're going to pay that guy that, but are they going to pay me? And should I really be charging people? Because I just want to help the community, right? So there's a lot of that goes on for sure. And then we develop these walls instead of trying to deal with that issue and realizing that's an internal thing, we end up limiting what we are even able to do because we don't think that we deserve it. And it's understandable. I mean, how many images and media out there do you see where people are praised for having money and not criticized for it? Right. You know, unless you're an athlete, right? Mm-hmm. Or people think that you got it because you got lucky. Right. And not because you earned it. And of course, we all stand on the foundation of our parents and, you know, things like that. But, you know, there's no shame in hard work and being able to earn money. And just because you earn money, we live in this capitalist system, doesn't mean everything is bad. There are some aspects that aren't so great, but you can still be a good capitalist, I believe.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that thing of like, I don't want to get paid for this because I want to help the community. Mm-hmm. Like, this is one I had to definitely work through early on in entrepreneurship, but like by getting paid, I help the community more. Right. Mm-hmm. And I was just listening to a podcast when I was driving home just before this call. And they were talking about, I have to go back and find like the original article, but when they first started like the microloans in third world countries, they've been studying that. And when the man of the house is the one that's the single bread earner, the money goes, like it gets blown, it goes back into the family's pocket, it goes into a bank, it never gets spent. Right. But when it's the woman who's the primary earner in the family, like the whole community is benefiting from that. Like, right. I wish I had found the numbers. Obviously, I didn't know we were going to talk about this, but like there's like research and numbers to show that when women have money, and I would venture to say that most people of underrepresented communities, because we know how hard it is to get started, like when we have the money, our whole neighborhood does better.
Right. Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. I think also just because of the roles that a lot of women play in families of taking care of, right? If you're the one who's doing the grocery shopping and these traditional type roles, grocery shopping, buying the clothes for the kids, you know, taking to the doctor's appointments, doing all that stuff, you are the one who's spending the money. Right. In your community. And so you will be making informed choices about where you actually want to spend it. Whereas if you don't have or take on that sort of caretaking role, you know, where are you spending money if you're spending it at all? Right. Mm-hmm. Like if it's that traditional role, typically the man is earning the money, but the woman is managing the finances and managing the money. So that makes sense to me. And I think also just like women are communal, you know, we want to build up and empower, you know, mm-hmm. we want to spend money with our friends and support our friends. Not that guys don't do that, but I think we just think of that community building more top of mind than I think the guys do.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yep. So where do you find your clients? Where do you find your clients? Where do you find the people that you want to connect with?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'm connected to a few community organizations. I'm in the Bay Area. And so like some coaching groups that are around here, and then they'll send me clients. I'm on Instagram, was on Facebook, but I'm so over Facebook. So I don't do much over there. But a lot of it has to do with word of mouth at this point, that people will, you know, I'll talk to people a little bit about what I do. And I actually probably should be talking about it more, because I've met people like in my dance community that are like, oh, I didn't know you were an attorney. I'm like, oh, okay. So maybe I should share a little bit more info. But a lot of it comes from word of mouth or joining different groups and just being out there. So I'm licensed in California. So most of the legal work that I do is in California, but in an effort to make the information available, like I talked about before, I've created this membership community called Transcend that is giving business and legal education to entrepreneurs. And that is open to anybody across the nation. It's not California specific. So then I'll be looking for people nationwide.
That's awesome. And I assume there's a fine line to walk there with legal advice versus legal education as you cross state lines.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And also I just have to be careful as an attorney, right? Because if I'm giving advice, I'm giving it in a one-on-one kind of a situation. I need to make sure that I have done my due diligence to get enough facts to be able to give good advice. So what I'm doing is providing a space where people can come and get education. Undoubtedly, there will be some questions. And I'll have to say, you gotta talk to me one-on-one about your specific situation. But I just want people to know, what are the contract terms that you need to know? What does this clause here mean? What's the benefit of having an LLC versus a corporation? What's the risk of not having either one of those? How do we plan for taxes? You know, what can we do with our businesses to save some money? So I'm not the advisor on the financial stuff, but I know a little bit about a little bit and want to be able to share that information with folks that has taken me years to learn. And if I can cut down that learning time for folks, then, you know, that'll make me happy.
Yeah. And putting some of it into plain English, especially when you get into like, should I even have an LLC, but like, what is that? And like, do I need one from the beginning, or can I start one in a year? Mm-hmm. And then you look at like, I'm looking for a tax person, accountant to talk to, because I have some questions around like some fine tuning. And I'm like, I don't know if I'm like an attorney or a tax person, like accountant, probably both of them I should talk to.
Right. Right.
You know, it's like there's so many details there, and you try to figure it out yourself, and it can be so overwhelming.
Yeah, definitely. And even on top of that, on top of having an attorney and an accountant, I always encourage people to find someone you can trust as a wealth advisor, you know, mm-hmm. or a financial planner, right? Because especially if you're an entrepreneur, then you are the one who's responsible for determining where your money goes. And that's such a great opportunity to make those plans. But things like, what about opening a retirement account through your business? You can do that. When we go to ask for a job, one of the first things we ask is, what does your 401k look like? And do you match, right? But we can do that for ourselves as well.
Yeah.
There's plenty of vehicles to do that. What do you want to do? You want to buy a house in another state or another country? Can you do that through your corporation? Can that be corporate housing for when you have board retreats, board of one board retreats, you know, in another place. Right. And I'm not encouraging anybody to be shady, but that's how, those are the benefits of having business entities. And it doesn't differ just because you're one person versus a company of 50 people, right? The same opportunity exists for you even in that space.
Yeah, absolutely. And having some go-to sources for that information.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Really important.
Talk to me a little bit about, especially in the working with underrepresented communities, how do we go about switching that mindset? Is there kind of a general conversation we should be having more, or is this a lot more deep one-on-one work? How do we make these mindset changes?
Yeah, I think it's both. Someone asked me the other day, they said, well, you have a lot of social justice work in your background. How do you bridge that with entrepreneurship? As if the two are mutually exclusive, right? And it took me a minute to kind of realize that they're not mutually exclusive, because there's all this talk right now in our society about oppression and about how capitalism is bad and defund all of these different entities. But I think that entrepreneurship is a really clear path to social justice, right? When you have people that are disempowered and unable to provide for themselves financially because the system or the folks operating in the system don't want them to be there, what's your other option? You got to go create your own, right? So empowering people who don't want to be in the system or who don't fit comfortably in the system, or even folks who have been incarcerated and are coming back out, you know, there is nothing to stop them from starting a business. And how do we change the thinking that you need a bunch of money to do it? You don't need a bunch of money. You need some skill. Now, if you want to open up a gym and have 50, you know, 1,000 machines, yeah, you're going to need some money for that, right? But if you want to do personal training now with FaceTime that people have that's free, or with WhatsApp that's free video, you know, you can create the program and then start where you are to begin to generate some income. So about the mindset shift, I think a lot of us who start out of necessity think that we're operating from a scarcity mindset. I don't have the money to do this. I could never be like that because I don't have that background. I didn't go to that school. I didn't come from Facebook, and you know, now I have my own tech company, right? Yeah. But that's scarcity. Scarcity doesn't get us very far. What about abundance? What about thinking about what we do have, what our passions are, what skills you have, what opportunities you have, and really working from there? Because when you think with abundance, the world opens up. Yeah. There's nothing you can't do if you believe that you can do it. But if you're scared to do it, or think there aren't enough resources, or you think that there's too much competition, you're going to be right. You're going to be right.
Right. And I imagine a conversation I have a lot of times with clients is, what is your definition of success? And I feel like this tails really well into that, because like we look at the Zuckerbergs, the Oprahs, we look at the big money and we're like, oh, this is a person who's self-made. But like, I have dozens and dozens of friends who are making really good money, who are living comfortably, who are right. able to make the change in their communities they want. And they're making six figures. They're taking home six figures, you know? So like, I think that's part of the conversation too, is like, for me to have an abundance mindset, I have to remind myself that doesn't mean I have to make $1 million.
Right.
That means I have to make what's right for me and mine.
Right. Exactly. There's some studies that show that once you make over a certain amount of money, I think I just heard the other day, it was like, once you make over $75,000, which seems so low for someone in California, that's not enough, right? But once you make whatever that threshold is, once you make over that, your happiness doesn't increase exponentially with the amount of money that you make, right? So it's not proportional. You need enough money to be able to live the lifestyle that you want. But whether you've got $500,000 or $5 million, how different really is that lifestyle in terms of your day-to-day? Probably not that different, right? And to answer your question about what success is, I really like that question, because in my opinion, it's whatever you decide that you want it to be, right? So if you want it to be making $1 million a year, awesome, do that. For me, I said a couple of years ago, I was like, I want to have a lifestyle. I want to have a job that pays me enough to live off of, right? And I want to have flexibility to be able to travel and to spend time with my friends and my family. Does that mean that I'm going to make $500 a year? Not initially, right? Because to make that much money, you got to put in that much time or figure out the system of how to do it. But, you know, in addition to running a law practice, I also teach at a community college that has great vacation, right? Because you've got a month off between fall and spring semester, and summer's off if I want them. And you know, the holidays built in, and my that's like my baseline. So anything else that I make over that is because I want to, and because I can put my energy and time into it. But someone else looking at that may go, you've got this law degree. How come you're not making $500,000 a year just yet? Because I don't want to. And that's okay. That's not for me.
That's not the priority. Absolutely. Yeah. And also I think that like, it can be a moving target when you are falling into entrepreneurship on the side of working a soul-crushing job because you need it out of necessity.
Mm-hmm.
Success might be $300 a month because that's enough that you can, you know, get a car so you're not using public transportation and wasting right. hours a day going to and from that job. Like,
right.
as you grow, that definition can shift. And then when you hit that point of like, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you've got food, you've got shelter paid for, you're out of the soul crushing job.
Right.
Now we can look at like, yeah, travel and explore mm-hmm. the other things for me, you know, charity, social work, all, you know, social justice, all that kind of stuff. Then you have right. room to start building that in.
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely right about that. Two thoughts came to mind. One, when people have children, they always say that they're so surprised, you know, how they change once the children come along because the things that were important to them before just aren't important. So to your point about it changes, success, your definition of success changes, and it can change, right? And it probably should because you're at different stages of your life. We don't stay the same. So the goal you set at 25 should probably look a little different when you're 40, right? Probably. Right. And then also the other part of it was that I think sometimes in entrepreneurship, we get down on ourselves because we think that we're supposed to get the idea, the plan, and then it's supposed to work forever. Right. And so when we have to pivot and when we have to adjust, it's really easy to look at that as failure. I'm not doing it right. Something is wrong. But you're not the same person you were 2 years ago when you started the business. The market is not the same. Maybe you've got different stuff going on. So working one-on-one with clients is just draining. And now you want to do group coaching and that's okay, right? Yeah. Maybe you wanted 50 items on your menu and now you've decided you want to do 5 things really, really well, because that gives you more time to spend with your kids, your family, your dog, whatever. That's okay. So yeah. we just have to be okay with things changing, right? They're going to yes. change. It doesn't mean that you have been unsuccessful, you failed, but that's what it is. It's constantly reinventing ourselves to meet the need at the time. And I don't think we talk about that enough, right? It feels yeah. like, oh, well, Facebook hasn't changed. It's still an online social platform. No. Facebook has really, really changed a lot, right? They've yep. pivoted. It's still called Facebook, but now they're in the business of selling data as opposed to just connecting people socially on the platform.
Right. Exactly. And also with that, one of the ones I talk about is that there's no right way to do business. Like
right.
that's the thing we get in that mindset of like, oh, I failed. Like, no, like you learned a lesson.
Right.
You learned a how not to, or,
yeah.
you know, there's like within the coaching industry, there's so much pressure to have like a mastermind or a group program or a course. Right. And I have gone down that rabbit hole and I have quote unquote failed at it. Mm-hmm. But I also realized in that process, like it takes a different mindset to do that kind of work that I don't enjoy. And I right. really love the one-on-one work and like
right.
the amount of hours, what I define as success right now, I don't need to have 100 people in a group program. And so right. like shifting that like there's no right way to do it. The right Absolutely. Way for me is very slow, very one-on-one,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't work more hours than I absolutely have to in a right. week, you know,
right.
and that's okay. And there's people who I have a friend who's got a very similar business to mine and she's crushing it and she's working 24/7 and she loves it. And that's what works for her.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's the thing too, right? Because it is good to get information from other people and you do want to connect with coaches who have done it before you. So you're not figuring this all out on your own, but at the same time, you do have to keep checking in with yourself and saying what works for you. So for example, I was litigating, I was doing employment law cases. I was representing plaintiffs who had been discriminated against and it was a grind. In the first couple of years, first like 2 or 3 years, it was enjoyable. I felt like I was young, I was fresh, I was out there, I was doing a thing, you know, mm-hmm. getting results. And then about that third, fourth year, it became so draining because I was not internalizing necessarily, but just empathizing so much with their struggle, my client's struggles. They'd lost their job. They didn't know what to do next. They were just defeated. And it became so draining for me that I didn't want to do the work anymore. But it took me, I won't say it took me a long time to pivot, but I had to really say, hey, Asha, it's okay if you don't want to be a litigator. You went to law school, but you don't have to be a litigator. You can find some other way to use your law degree and to make money. So it's really about checking in with what fits. I took a couple of years off, decided I needed a break, you know, came back after a couple years. I'm like, I don't want to do too much of the one-on-one stuff. I want to do more of this group thing, right? This one to many, because I love having the conversation. I love teaching. So that's where this group membership came from. I would rather talk to 50 people at one time about what's important in a contract than to do 50 one-on-one meetings that are super draining in person or over Zoom, right? And take up all of my time.
Exactly. Yeah, totally. Like, that's the model that works for you.
Right.
There's no right way to do it. That people do. I have clients who I think want to wring my neck. They're like, well, should I do this or this? And I'm like, well, there's no right answer. They're like, really? Well, let's weigh the options. Like, how do you feel like physically when we talk about this thing? How do you feel physically when we talk about that thing? Like, pros and cons in terms of finances and scheduling and so much passion and so much that goes into it.
Absolutely. For that. I'm finding that now it seems like in the entrepreneurship world and these different communities I'm in, people are tapping more into their intuition. They're tapping more into their feelings. They're checking in with their bodies with a lot of these soft skills or this more sort of feminine energy that I didn't see when I first started my own business. And I don't know if that's because I was connected more towards legal people who were running businesses, or maybe just the trend now is to build a business that fits around us. I think there are more models now than there were, you know, 10 years ago. But I really like that people are being encouraged to decide what is best for them, right? Yeah. There's the dominant paradigm. Everybody's got a three-step process to make you at the $100,000 in 10 minutes, right?
Right.
But just checking in, like, does this feel right to you? And if it doesn't, keep moving on, you know, next, please, you know, maybe I'll check this out. No, not that one either. Okay. And then, you know, you get to something that you can enjoy. Cause if you don't enjoy, I'm not the kind of person who can do work that I don't enjoy. I remember my business partner told me that one time. He's like, if you don't like something, you really can't do it. I said, I sure can't. But knowing that about myself is really, really helpful.
Exactly. So
I can't take on a project that I don't want to do because I know I'm just not going to put my best effort into it. Whereas other people are like, if it makes me money, I'll do it and I'll give it my best. Like, that's just not me. I gotta be, you know, attached to it somehow and be passionate about the work. So knowing yourself is really, really important.
So important. Yeah. And I think I would say that there's definitely been an evolution in that, because I've been in the online, you know, in my self-employed entrepreneurship for like 7 years now. And yeah, it was all what some people are starting to refer to as all that bro marketing tactic. There was kind of one way to run an online business. And now that's shifting, and you see a lot more. I feel like for the last couple of years, there's a lot more conversation around now, to the point that the word's been destroyed, but authenticity and trusting yourself and building the business that's right for you.
Right.
And I feel like we're now seeing over this last year, to kind of swing back to a conversation from earlier, I think entrepreneurship, I feel like, is on the forefront of a bunch of social justice stuff. Like, we have the space, we have the time, we get to build it the way we want. So like, auditing the people that I call when I'm looking for resources, like, you know, trying to diversify, trying to keep my Instagram feed. I'm going to rant about the algorithm for a second. Trying to keep my Instagram and TikTok algorithms to stop just showing me white people. It's amazing. Like, TikTok this summer had a Black Creators Day, and all I did for like 3 days was watch Black creators, like their content, engage with their content, follow them. Within like a week, they stopped showing up in my algorithm.
I'm
like, oh, you're killing me. Like,
You know, and I think that's really interesting, because we know that there's an algorithm, but I don't think we realize as producers of content how much that really plays into, you know, who really sees your content. So it's really easy to internalize that. Like, I appreciate that you're making an effort to diversify your feed, right? But even with your effort, the system won't let it happen, right? So then if I'm looking at my feed, I'm going, oh gosh, how come no one's commenting on it? It's not necessarily because of something that I'm doing, right? There's a whole system that supports what it is designed to support. You see, you know, it's producing the result that it's designed to produce. So
And when we've got small businesses who can pivot so much faster, that now, like, you know, any business that's under, I don't know, 500 people should be having conversations and making changes about being aware of systemic issues within their company or issues that, you know, they want to address on a bigger, you know, bigger level. Like, we get to start doing that now because we can pivot faster and we can make those decisions financially faster. We don't have to run it through 100 years of red tape. And
exactly.
That's what makes the small business so powerful when you talk about business and social justice.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and you're hiring people on a local level. I mean, I think that's one of the best ways to change your financial future right now. But I will say that entrepreneurship is not for everybody. You know, you have to have that drive and that determination. And if you don't, and you find more security in going to work for somebody else, do that. I'm not, and I'm a person that has dual income, right? I've got my teaching job that is very secure. And then I've got my law practice, which is sort of turned into my side hustle. So I'm not knocking anybody for going to work for an employer at all. But I do think that creating businesses is one of the best ways to secure your financial future because you're in charge. I think it's one of the best ways to change your family because you set an example for the people around you. You know, you're teaching your kids, if you have them, how to work and what it looks like to stick to something, kind of the same way that sports does. I think also when you're choosing who to hire, you have the opportunity to hire people in your neighborhood. Let's say you have a store, you have a restaurant, hire local. Right?
Yeah.
You really have the opportunity and the power because of the money, the economics, to change everybody within your immediate circle. So don't, you know, it is a huge undertaking. It's a lot of responsibility, but it also creates a lot of opportunity and a lot of power and a lot of growth, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not just for you, you know, it doesn't have to be just for you. It can be for everybody else as well.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, I love that point. What is one piece of advice that you wish you had known sooner?
Yeah, I think probably what I'd said before, that it's not going to stay the same and that that's okay, right? Yeah. That it doesn't mean that you're doing it wrong. So if you know, some days I wake up, I'm like, I don't want to do this anymore. Not the business part of it, but I don't want to do this offer like this anymore. You know, and I'm someone who beats myself up when I'm like, oh, I should have known, or I shouldn't have done that. But now I'm starting to teach myself that mindset shift. No, you are evolving. You are changing. You know, you can do whatever the heck you want to do, right? It doesn't have to be the exact same every day. That, and also it takes time to get the recognition that you want, right? It takes time to build the client base. It takes time to build the brand. It takes time to get to where you want to go. So when you're looking at people who are 5 or 10 years ahead of you, you're not comparing yourself to them. You're learning from them.
Yes.
And it doesn't mean that you're doing it wrong or that you're not on the right path if you're not where you want to be. But think about, you know, have the goal for the outcome, but focus much more on the steps that it's going to take to get you to where you want to go, and be relentless about taking the next step, as opposed to this success has got to look like this thing that I said 3 years ago for my business.
Right. I love that. Yeah. And like when you're looking at that person that's 10 years ahead, it makes me think of like when you're hearing that overnight success story,
right?
Like hit pause and go look at their 10 years of work before that.
Exactly.
That's what you want to model off of. You're not trying to like recreate their $80,000 launch or whatever. Like go look at the steps that took to get to that one moment where shit finally clicked.
Absolutely.
You know, same kind of idea there.
It's so true. There's no such thing as an overnight success, right? No. You may have found out about them overnight, like last night you went to bed and didn't know, and now today you know, right? But there's nothing, right? Even the people who have made it on The Voice or these shows have been singing since they were children, right?
Yes.
They've been dancing since they were 5. They have been, you know, people have been putting in the time, you just don't see it. So don't take yourself out or fool yourself by thinking that you're not moving fast enough.
Right. Yeah. And there's a skill. This is a reminder I need more often, is that running a business is a skill that has to be practiced just like singing or dancing. Like,
yes,
I inherently have the personality of an entrepreneur. Like that's how my brain goes, but I still have to practice showing up each day and reading the analytics and reading the room and all that kind of stuff. Like,
yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's the same idea of like, you know, a restaurant owner loves to cook, but you got to learn how to run a business. Doesn't mean that you can't do it, right? It just means that I think also we're in a forever learning process.
Yeah.
You know, forever learning. So, you know, and especially I remember when I first started out in law and probably even 5 years in, I was like, oh my God, I still feel like I don't know what I'm doing. Right. because law is huge. It's so big. Yes. And you only have the experience that you have. And it just takes more time to get more experience. But then you hit a point where you feel competent in the skill set. Right. And then you can refine the business and you kind of feel like you know what you're doing. But I think that each level that you go to invokes a different sort of set of insecurity because it requires a different set of skill. What got you to $100 a month isn't going to take you to 1,000, right? And that what you did to get there isn't going to take you to 20,000. You're going to have to adjust. So be comfortable knowing that one, you're going to be uncomfortable, and two, you're going to keep growing and you're going to keep learning and you're going to keep reinventing because that's what it is. Nothing, no living thing stays the same. Our businesses, our people, nothing stays the same.
And I think that is the exclamation point on the episode right there. I think that's perfection. Tell us where we can find you online, learn more about you, and learn about how we can be legally protecting our businesses.
Yes, absolutely. So I hang out the most on Instagram. My handle is Asha Wilkerson ESQ on Instagram. And then my website is thewilkersonlawoffice.com. So reach out to me, say hi. Yeah, let us know what you thought.
Awesome. And thewilkersonlawoffice.com/transcend to learn more about your membership.
Yes, absolutely. And there's also a big banner on the homepage, so you can't miss it. I made sure you got to check it out.
There you go. Perfect. Thank you so much. This has been a delight.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in for another week of Steady She Grows. If you like what you're hearing, be sure to screenshot the show and give a share over on Instagram. Tag me at Casey.Jordan and share your key takeaways. You can also rate and review the show on Apple Podcast or wherever you give it a listen. And until next week, my friends, keep on crushing it.